Habitat Gandhi.
"This is big," said Hamilton Cree. He and his two cohorts were standing with Jordan just inside the entryway to the interior of the cylindrical habitat. Before them stretched kilometer after kilometer of tidy green fields, with streams meandering through them and little villages standing like toy towns here and there. Off in the hazy distance, the fields ended at what looked like a huge metal cap, but the fields rose up and curved overhead in a complete circle. Their guide, an almost painfully thin, gray-haired, dark-skinned Bengali, smiled brightly.
"It is an inside-out world," he said in lilting English. Pointing to the long, bright window that ran the length of the cylinder, he added,
"Welcome the new day and your arrival in Habitat Gandhi."
Jordan replied in Hindi, "Thank you." The guide's smile got even brighter.
"It is nothing."
It was unusual to see a person who looked so old. Jordan wondered if the man's religious beliefs forbade rejuvenation therapies. Whatever his age, he seemed sprightly enough as he led them to a gaudily colored minibus. There was no driver, the bus was fully automated. Jordan took the front seat, hoping their guide wouldn't test his Hindi vocabulary too far. The guide sat on the other side of the aisle, while Cree and the other two security agents took seats behind them.
"We are going to a very fine hotel," said the guide after telling the voice recognition system their destination. "Very fine indeed."
The practically noiseless electric engine started up, and they were on their way through the gracefully curving roads that threaded from village to village, heading for the biggest town in the habitat and the very fine hotel they'd been booked into. By noon, Jordan had unpacked his meager travel bag and was pacing his hotel room impatiently. He had removed the prosthesis that the makeup woman had applied and thoroughly washed up. Lakshmi Ramachandra was gone. Jordan Kell had reappeared. There was a holographic viewer on one wall of his hotel room, but Aditi had not contacted him. Nor did he pick up any signal from the communications test that she was involved in. "She's probably surrounded by the technical team she's been working with," he told himself. "Be patient." Still, he paced nervously. The room's phone buzzed. Startled, Jordan called out,
"Answer."
Cree's somber face appeared on the phone's screen.
"We're ready to move whenever you give the word," he said.
Sitting on the edge of the bed, Jordan replied, "I have no idea when the word might come through. You might as well go out and see the local sites. I'll call you if anything turns up." Cree shrugged.
"Not much of a town. Shouldn't take more than 10 minutes to take in the local sites."
With a sardonic smile, Jordan said, "I'm sure you'll find something interesting. I'll stay here and wait for a call."
"He's gone to the habitat?" asked Anita Halleck.
Nordquist said,
"I'm sure of it."
Halleck was on her way to a committee meeting. Nordquist paced alongside her down a long, crowded corridor, followed by a phalanx of Halleck's aides and sycophants. The two women made a striking sight. Halleck, youthfully vigorous, sleek, long-legged, wearing a trousered suit of royal blue, her chestnut hair coiled atop her head. Nordquist, several centimeters taller, athletically built, blonde braids hanging down her back, pale-eyed in a glittering metallic sheath.
"Why would he go to the habitat?" Halleck demanded.
"He agreed to let us take him there."
"He went on his own so he could find his wife and get her away from us," Nordquist answered.
"You're sure of this? You have evidence?" Without breaking stride, Nordquist shook her head.
"Just a hunch, but it all adds up. We're checking the passenger manifests and the visual imagery of everyone who boarded a shuttle for Gandhi since yesterday."
"The time of the shooting?"
"That's right."
Halleck fell silent for several hurried strides. Then, "If you find any shred that he's already gone to the habitat, any speck of evidence at all, I want you to take a team up there and find him."
"I should put a team together and go to the habitat right now. No sense wasting time. I can still review the passenger lists while I'm on the way."
"How long would it take you to get there?"
"High priority flight. 6 hours, maybe less."
"That fast?"
"It would be high G boost," Nordquist said.
With just a hint of a smile, she added,
"The guys won't like it. They're always worried about straining their testicles."
Halleck smiled back at her.
"Do it."
Castiglione was bored by the scientist's work. "It's like watching a Wagner opera," he thought. "Hours of tedium interrupted by moments of brilliance." The tedium was getting on his nerves.
Frankenheimer and his aides were tinkering with an assemblage of equipment that was far beyond Castiglione's understanding or interest. "That pile of junk is supposed to do the same things that Aditi can do in her head?" he wondered.
Aditi was sitting quietly in one corner of the cluttered room, while Frankenheimer and his people puttered around the incomprehensible heap of electronic hardware scattered across a tabletop. Something had gone wrong with their first attempt to communicate with their colleagues back in Barcelona, and now the nerds were frantically replacing microscopic components and thumbnail-sized circuit chips. Aditi watched patiently, her lips moving now and then. She's talking to her people on New Earth, Castiglione realized. 8 light-years away, and she's having a conversation with them. So what? He asked himself. Tonight she's going to have a conversation with me, and I'll be much closer to her than her friends on New Earth. Still pacing impatiently in his hotel bedroom, Jordan was startled to see Audrey's seamed, bald face appear in the holographic viewer. The old man seemed to be sitting in a park somewhere in the alien city on New Earth.
Friend Jordan.
Audrey, this is a surprise.
I'm afraid it still takes an hour or so for your words to reach me, so if you don't mind, I will tell you what Aditi wants you to know,
Audrey said in his slightly sibilant, paper-thin voice. Jordan nodded.
By the way, your brother Brandon sends his regards, as do the others of your group.
Good, Jordan replied silently, but what of Aditi? As if he could read Jordan's mind, Audrey went on.
Aditi is well, but the communication device that your scientists have built has broken down. They are trying to fix it. That's why she hasn't contacted you directly.
Relief washing through him, Jordan asked, Can you show me where in the habitat she is located? Then he mentally kicked himself, realizing that Audrey wouldn't hear the question for an hour. But he was saying,
She wants you to know where she is being held.
Audrey's image was replaced by a graphic showing Habitat Gandhi's interior layout. One of the buildings was highlighted by a blinking yellow cursor. That's where she is, Jordan said to himself. Unconsciously clenching his fists, Jordan said, Tell her I'll come to her. Tonight.